Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms, RPM, and All GTLDs PDP Working Group call held on the 1st of February, 2018. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll calls. We have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Kathy Kleiman. Please begin.
Hi, everyone. This is Kathy Kleiman, one of the three co-chairs. I see Phil Corwin is with us as well, and I think J. Scott Evans is on the road and traveling and probably will not be able to join us this evening. I am just back from NamesCon in Las Vegas with a cold, so you may hear me sniffling through this call a bit. I first wanted to ask, is there anyone on the call from the Asia-Pacific region? If you could just raise your hand in the chat room. That would be great. One of the things we're always looking for is, you know, does this meeting make sense, and is it useful for people in the Asia-Pacific region? So if you're in the Asia-Pacific region, could you raise your hand or put a check or something like that? I'd appreciate that. Okay. Terrific. We have 13 participants for this late night call, late night East Coast time. Let me just double check. Are there any objections to continuing with the meeting? We're always looking to see, whether we have enough people, whether we have a quorum, but not in the technical sense. Does anyone object to continuing the meeting with 13 participants? Okay. Well, great. So an overview of today's agenda is first we'll check for updates to statement of interest, and then we're going to hopefully wrap up our discussion of URS topics for review by looking again at the URS discussion document that was provided by the co-chairs. We have Phil, who I'm hoping may be able to present this in overview because we've discussed it a few times again, but also we've had some letters filed in comments to the working group, which is a great way to submit comments. So we'll do that, and then if someone could add to the agenda a third topic, which is, of course, previews of coming attractions for next week as we go into a new and very interesting area. That's planned for next week, and a lot of work's been done by co-chairs and staff in preparation for entering a deeper dive into some material. Okay, so we'll do that at the very end. So first, any updates to statement of interest? Anybody have a new job or position in this January of 2018? Okay, terrific. So now we go to we'll just jump right in. And, my hope is that we may not go our full 90 minutes, just to let everybody know. So we're looking at, and it's been posted, you see it posted as the main slide, the list of topics for review of the Uniform Rapid Suspension System. And I'll just quickly review. We have high-level questions that have been edited very slightly from the original, 1 through 5, and these are kind of a template for how we're going to look at it looks like this document's in everyone's individual control. So if you could go down to part one at the bottom of page one, you'll see part one, draft list of suggested URS topics. So we'll use the high-level topics as a way of screening things like A, the complaint, B, the notice of complaint, C, the response, D, standard of proof, and you can read the rest of them. So we've done very well on that process. And if you jump to, and here I'm just giving an overview of what we've been doing for the last few weeks. But if you jump to the table, the more detailed table in part two, it's page 3, and it says part 2, accompanying table of URS charter questions. You'll see that the suggested topics were extracted from both original charter questions that were part of what was given to us by the GNSO Council when they sent us our marching orders for starting this working group. And also there were questions that were suggested, particularly at the meeting, ICANN 60, the meeting in Abu Dhabi, and then added afterwards. So we're going to now jump, and that table is very interesting, so you see both the high-level topics and the charter questions and the underlying questions. So, but if we jump all the way down to page 9, part 3, the co-chair statement on URS review, you'll see that the three co-chairs have put together just some additional thoughts, which, you know, as members, as co-chairs, and which we've done before, which provides some thoughts on particularly at looking at some of the provider issues. We worked a lot with providers under the Trademark Clearinghouse, talking to Deloitte and IBM, and the Forum is the largest provider of URS services. In fact, they were just at NamesCon in Las Vegas talking about their procedures, and they seem very happy to talk about it. So some questions have been drafted that would provide kind of a little clear, more detailed jump into that. I'd like to, I don't know, Phil, how you're feeling. Would you like to take a moment to provide, again, a short overview, as you have in the past, of the co-chair statement before we jump into some of the comments that have been raised on the working group? And anyone else who wants to comment, please go ahead.
Yeah, sure, Kathy. I can
thanks,
talk.
Thanks, Phil.
And thanks for handling the call overall, Kathy. Yeah, the statements, you know, we've seen it before. It was issued on November 30th of last year. It basically begins by reciting a bunch of fairly general and unfocused questions that are in the charter regarding URS and overarching questions relating to all of the RPM reviews. And then when you get down to the top of the second page, it basically says that the co-chairs propose that to have a more focused evaluation of the URS, that we actually evaluate them according to the rules under which the and procedures under which the URS is supposed to operate, which are in the applicant guidebook and the URS rules and the procedures, and in the memorandum of understanding that ICANN has entered into with the three accredited providers. So it's basically first question is, have they administered the RPM in a manner that's consistent with the procedures, rules, and the MOU? Has there been any oversight by ICANN to ensure the MOU compliance, since it's a rudimentary contract, and also as ICANN received any complaints about URS administration, and if it did, how has it dealt with them? So this would, you know, we've got the rules, the procedures, the rudimentary contract. Are they acting in accord with them? Has ICANN taken a look to see if they are doing so? And has ICANN gotten any complaints? You know, if they haven't gotten any complaints, great, but if they have, we'd like to know if there's been any further inquiry or follow-up action. The next one is would require somewhat more subjective and qualitative review, which is basically URS is a subset of UDRP limited to supposedly black and white cases that meet a higher standard of evidence, a clear and convincing standard, not preponderance of the evidence, which is UDRP, and have the decisions issued under U.S. been limited to such cases, or have the panelists wandered into shades of gray cases rather than referring them to the UDRP as would be proper? And then the final bullet point is since at the time we issued the memo with a communication, ICANN staff had already informed us in the working group that there have been some small percentage of URS decisions appealed. What was the result of the appeals? Were the original decision sustained or reversed, and that's pretty much it. So it's really, and it was just for working group to kick off a discussion to basically say that the charter questions are fairly general and subjective, and how can we have a more objective review of the ERS? And it seemed like reviewing the actual performance in the context of the relevant requirements would be a reasonable way to proceed. So I hope that's helpful as a quick recap.
Very helpful, Phil. Thank you very much. And before I call on George, I will just note that in the charts that we have of the suggested topics, the high-level topics, we have section M. M as in Mary. URS, which is about URS providers, and has an area number one, evaluation of URS providers and their respective processes, including training of panelists. So we do have a section about URS providers and evaluation. So I just wanted to point that out. George, go ahead, please.
George Gregos for the transcript. Thanks. Those were the four questions that appeared on page 10 of the PDF, correct? I just want to note that directly before those four questions, it says, the co-chairs therefore propose for a working group review and discussion, and here's the key part, that in addition to or as a focused substitutes for the above and other relevant charter questions, we should address these specific questions. If you go back to page 9, where it has those two sets of overarching questions, it seems to me that there's like slightly different coverage between the four points on page 10, the four bullet points on page 10 and the two bullet points on page 9. So I think that these should be considered as supplementary and, in addition to, and I don't see how the word focus substitutes would work because they don't actually substitute for the two on page 9. So I support all six of the bullet points, in other words.
Wait, George, before you go, so you support keeping them, you support having them as part of our review?
Right. And okay. I support the word as in addition to, but, and not the part that says as focus substitutes. If you substituted them, then you'd actually be replacing the questions on page 9, and the questions on page 9 are totally different than the ones on page 10.
Okay, so in addition to that I will make a note.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jeff, go ahead, please. Oh, and just share with everybody, Jeff and I were on the same flight this morning from Las Vegas. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you. This is Jeff Newman. And it was not delayed, which maybe you were my good luck, Kathy, because usually every flight I'm on gets delayed.
And you lose your luggage, too, so I'm glad you didn't lose your luggage.
Right. So on the bullet point, the URS decisions, which Susan has commented on as well, I really have a problem with this notion of a qualitative review. And the reason I do, and why I kind of support the alternate framing, which is, how have the providers been trying to ensure that the clear and convincing evidence standard is enforced. I support that. The reason I don't support a qualitative review of these cases is because I think it's obviously at the end of the day there is some subjectivity in determining whether it's clear and convincing evidence, and reasonable minds can always, in a way, differ. I kind of look at it like reviewing. If a jury trial in the United States, and sorry, this is U.S. focused, but if a trial by jury is reviewed on appeal, generally what the courts will review are the instructions given to a jury, but they would not put themselves in the place, a judge on appeal wouldn't put themselves in the place of a juror to determine whether the jury was reasonable in deciding to go one way or the other. But what it does do is say, okay, were the instructions that were given to the jury the appropriate instructions so that the jury could apply the appropriate standard? I look at this kind of similarly, in which we could say, you know, what has the providers, what are the, in essence, jury instructions that the provider gives to the panelists? And, you know, are those instructions, we can review those instructions to determine whether we think they're in line with the URS. I have no issue with that. But to actually go back and put in our own qualitative kind of assessment as to whether each of us thinks it met the clear and convincing evidence standard is going to be way too subjective for us to review.
Jeff,
and it's
Jeff,
yeah.
Can I ask you a question? What if there's no
sure.
evidence whatsoever in that decision? Nothing. Zero. Does that?
Again, I think it's I just think that that's not our role, because we can't overturn the decision anyway. What we can do is we can improve the jury instructions, if you will. We can then go and say, you know, what did the provider advise their panelists? Is this the right thing? Does this meet what we believe should be instructed to the panelists? And if not, let's figure out a way to improve it. But a qualitative review of decisions, it's not fair. It's not something that – I think it's reasonable minds would differ. Thanks.
Okay. A quick note, qualitative review may have lots of different meanings, and I'm not sure the co-chair statement was meant to be an appeal of any sort. I think what we're going to find, and I already kind of tipped my hat on it, that you know some of us have been going through some of these decisions, not in the systematic way that we're about to, but there are some decisions that don't have a modicum of evidence. If I were involved in them, I would have no idea why I won or why my domain name was suspended. So in terms of qualitative review. No, Jeff, it actually wasn't a response to you, and I think we've got Greg, and I mean, you're welcome to respond, but that's an issue, guys. That's got to be an issue if there's no way to understand what the decision was based on. Anyway, I think Greg's in the queue. Go ahead, Greg.
This is Greg. I'll let Jeff respond first. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Greg. Yeah, I put myself at the back of the queue just in case. But, I think, Kathy, again, you know, we could explain, you know, talk to the providers, and we can make sure that the instructions include what we think might fit that standard or review that. But to go back and review the decisions that have already been done and act in a way kind of like an appeals court, if you will, it's not the right thing for us to do. I really strongly object to us doing that, and not because I'm representing any interest here. This is really just a personal thing. Having participated in jury trials here in the U.S. on the jury, you know, if the instructions are correct and we're happy with the instructions, we have to leave well enough alone as to the outcome, in my view. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Greg, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. I also think this is a problem. I share Jeff's concerns. I also note, Kathy, that you made a rather brazen assumption that we're about to do a qualitative review.
Hey, can we leave the adjectives out?
I think that
let's not get into personal. I'm getting offended, and other people are too.
I wasn't saying you were brazen. The assumption was brazen. To distinguish between a critique of what was said and the person saying it, I'm saying that the statement was assumed too much because we haven't agreed to do this. And I think that, frankly, also as a supposedly neutral co-chair, I think it's, you know, doubly objectionable that you should even be supporting one view or the other. much less assuming that your view carries the day. And that's not personal. It's just a discussion of the issues and the way they're being handled. So, in any case, I think the idea of doing a qualitative review when you don't have the complaint, when you don't have the answer, when you don't have access to the panelist is just basically an invitation to take pot shots at decisions. We could ask the service providers whether they review provisions and review decisions to see whether they meet a minimum standard and whether there is a minimum standard. You're assuming that there's a minimum standard and that it's being somehow being not being met. We haven't established that. I think we're supposed to review the procedures and the proceedings, or rather the way the subject, the providers do their work. So I'm strongly in favor of Susan's take on this, which I think was also supported by Brian Beckham in the email exchange, if I remember correctly. And I think we generally have to consider what the process is by which this group is going to indicate that it supports adopting any of these co-chair suggestions, because there is no presumption that they're that any of them are adopted. The first two, I think, have seemed relatively unobjectionable, and they are objective, which is good. And I think when you introduce this, maybe it was Phil who introduced it and said that the idea was for these to be objective, and then all of a sudden number three here is incredibly subjective and is going to be based on an insufficient amount of input, but a whole lot of kind of people, you know, loaded for bear and hunting, it seems, for something they've already assumed they will find. Which is a very bad way to begin what's supposed to be an objective investigation. So in short, I think number three should be tossed in favor of Susan's suggestion or words to that effect. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Two questions I heard you raise. I don't know if they were captured in the notes. Were, is there a minimum standard, and is that minimum standard being met? So I just wanted to make sure that that was in the notes. Justin, and I'm just going through some of the chat. Justin says, can someone point us to some stats on such anomalies and how rampant it is? That's an interesting question. And Phil Corwin writes, the co-chairs did not envision there would be any reversal of prior decisions, of course. Rebecca, please go ahead.
Thank you, Rebecca Kushnet. So I think that we are sometimes using subjective in a kind of unhelpful way in this discussion, because if you take the position that, you know, in the end, it's always subjective whether a particular decision was good or not, that sort of, then why do we have a domain name system where we let people transfer stuff? We thought that there were some cases of clear abuse, which I think is correct, but that's actually a judgment. It is literally a judgment. It doesn't mean it's actually subjective. We have standards and ideas about how people come to consensus even when they have to make a judgment. But I think the broader point is we're not a court of appeals, nor is the panelist a jury, nor is this a U.S. Federal proceeding. There is an appeal process in the U.S. This is not it. Perhaps a slightly more apt analogy is we're a legislative review panel looking at what the rules should be. If our current rules are producing a bunch of bad results, we need to know that. If they're producing a bunch of good results, by the way, we also need to know that. We're not limited to checking the jury instructions, and, of course, a court of appeals in the U.S. is not limited only to that, by the way, even if the standard for reversing a decision is high. So even if you took this analogy seriously, it would be a mistake to say that all we get to do is look at the jury instructions. I actually was thinking more about Miranda, the decision in the U.S. about how police officers have to give you a warning about anything you say can be used against you. It'd be ridiculous to say that in evaluating whether that rule was doing what we wanted, that we should only look at what police captains officially tell their officers. We'd actually want to know what's going on. And, you know, if it's going well, that's good. If it's going badly, there are things we might be able to do. I take seriously the concern that we won't necessarily have all the evidence in front of us. There are ways around that if we identify decisions that, you know, on first glance seem troubling. We can certainly ask the complainant. There are other things we might do, especially if there is contact information for the person, for the registrant. But we don't know any of that until we look at what's actually happening. And, you know, there are resource constraints, so we may have to pick and choose. But I think we can all recognize that that will, you know, be grounds for debate, too. You know, we can talk about what sample we have. But I think the idea that we should sort of turn off our judgment at the point at which we ask, well, did they say the rules correctly? I think that would be a mistake. Thank you.
Terrific, Rebecca. Thank you. I hope, like others, your suggestions are captured in the notes. It's hard to kind of follow everything all at once. Before I call on Jeff, a question kind of that Jeff and others can comment on is, should we be reading in more detail Susan's comments and Brian's comments? A lot of people are referring to them. Does anyone, you know, need us to go review them, or did they review them, you know, sufficiently on the list? Jeff, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff. Rebecca, your analogies are just as bad as mine, right? I could argue a million holes in your analogies just like you did with mine. I was trying to make a point. At the end of the day, it does come down to a judgment based on the facts before it and what's presented. It's not something... it's not like reading a Miranda right. Did they do it or not? That's pretty easy to tell. You know, you can go back and did they read Miranda rights? Cool. Yes or no. This is not that. There's no yes or no review you do on clear and convincing evidence. And I do have to state that we are not an independent legislative body. Most of the people in this group have come to this group with a view or a perspective. We are not completely independent. There's no one in this group. And I'll say that even including the co-chairs, no offense to the co-chairs, there's no one that's completely independent. Whether you come from a registrant perspective or an IP perspective or a registry perspective or a registrar. So we have no qualifications to do any kind of review of the type that you're suggesting or that's suggested with a qualitative review. Let's not kid ourselves, okay? Let's do what we can do to determine, you know, what does it mean by clear and convincing evidence? We can discuss that. We can discuss.
Did anyone else just lose Jeff?
Yep.
Okay.
Hi, this is Terry. It looks like he did lose his connection. I'm sure he'll be rejoining here shortly.
Alas. Okay. It looks like he's still... Has he popped off? He may have lost his internet connection as well. So I'm actually going to put myself in the queue and take off my co-chair's hat. I wish Jeff were on. But we are indeed not an independent legislative body. We can't be. But no legislative body I know is actually independent. Independent in that sense, meaning they don't have biases. They all do. But we did make these rules. We did adopt them. And it does seem to be our job to review them. And this is a proceeding for clearly abusive cases. And I don't know how we certify that to ICANN unless we look at them and look at them closely. And that's, you know, that would appear to be part of our rules. Our obligation to ICANN in this proceeding is, does this set out to do what it intended to do, which is the rapid takedown, faster than the UDRP of clearly abusive cases. That was at least what I thought we were writing with the STI, which, as you know, I was a member of the team on. Phil, let me go ahead, please, and I'm hoping Jeff is coming back as well. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. And if Jeff gets back, I'll be glad to yield to him. I just want to make a few points, which I hope no one will find brazen or controversial. I think I've heard general agreement so far that our URS review should be objective, and I would hope that would mean that just as we review Trademark Clearinghouse to make sure that only marks that met the criteria for registration were getting in, that we would, you know, want to do that kind of objective review against the procedures, rules, and MOU. Second, I want to point out that unlike the other RPMs, with the exception of the one that's never been used, the trademark dispute resolution procedure, this is the only RPM we're really dealing with in phase one of our work, which is going to be affected by the overarching question of whether the RPM should become consensus policy, that is applied to all legacy TLDs for which they haven't yet been adopted. So right now the URS is only available at a minority of registered domains, not the majority. That consensus policy doesn't really apply to legacy domains in regard to Trademark Clearinghouse or claims notice, but it very much applies to this one. And so that would argue for a fairly rigorous review before you want to make sure this is being done right and working for all parties before you apply it, would recommend applying it to the majority of the domains. And then I want to bring up two issues and that concern me in my review. These are personal remarks now, I don't think anything earth-shaking would come out. I just want to raise it as illustrations. One, there are minimum requirements for what's supposed to be in a URS decision. I forget where they come from right now or the elements, but we'd want to see that decisions did contain the minimum that was supposed to be in each decision under the rules, procedures, and MOU. And I have seen URS decisions which basically just say, this party brought a complaint against this domain, and I, the examiner, find that the evidentiary burden was met, and therefore I order the suspension of the domain. And you can read the decision and not even know what the trademark was at issue or what was at the website, or even if the website was being used. So we might look at that and say, well, just as we're trying to build in additional data collection for other RPMs, we might want to up the requirements for what's supposed to be in a decision. It wouldn't seem that burdensome to me personally to ask the examiner to name the trademark involved and to state what, if any, content was at the domain. So that might be a result of that type of review, qualitative review, but the result's not anything I think would be earth-shattering or highly objectionable. I've also seen decisions which clearly stated that the domain was dark, that it was not in use, and that introduces a consideration that the working group a question that the working group might consider, which is when you have a RPM that's supposed to find bad faith registration and use by a high standard of evidence, should you allow suspension of domains that are not being used? And you can argue that both ways. You could say, well, no, if you're supposed to establish bad faith use by a clear and convincing evidence and there's no use, there shouldn't be a suspension. Or you might make the argument, well, the URS is a subset of the UDRP, and in the UDRP there's something called the passive holding doctrine, which is addressed at Section 3.3 of the WIPO guidelines, which does allow sanctions against the domain, even when it's not being used. There's a blank page or a coming soon page. If you find certain elements, such as distinctiveness of the complainant's mark, failure to submit a response by the registrant, active attempts to conceal identity or provide false contact details, and implausibility of any good faith use to which the domain name might be put, you might say, well, in that case, a URS is perfectly appropriate as a subset of the UDRP, but the working group might decide that in such a case, given the higher evidentiary burden that's supposed to be met, we'd like the examiner to insert an extra sentence or two explaining how the passive holding doctrine applied. So those are two examples where I think a qualitative review would not be second-guessing so much as informing the working group as to whether some additional information should be in future decisions. So that's my view on that, and I hope that's helpful and not too controversial. Thank you.
Phil, before you leave, would that, based on what you just said, do you think a rewriting of the third bullet point might be in order in light of this discussion?
Yeah, I wouldn't object to rewriting any of this. I just think that some qualitative review of the actual decisions would be a worthwhile exercise for this working group, and would not be an attempt to call out the examiners for doing a bad job or trying to reverse decisions, but might be saying we need to adjust what's required in the decisions going forward.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. Thank you for your detailed comments. And it looks like they're addressing some of the questions that have been raised in the chat about what we might look at in this type of review. Jeff, welcome back.
Thanks. I don't know what happened there. On the question of, maybe this is a question first. It's my understanding that the decisions, URS decisions, are not, they're just like a, right? There's just an answer or just a declaration of what the decision is. Do they provide any written opinion or any kind of support for their decision, or it's just the decision? It's my understanding, I thought it was just the decision, so
it's
I don't
not.
Know how we called it.
It's not. Jeff, it's not. And some of them are much better than others. They're shorter. They're a lot shorter than the UDRP decisions. But some, when we go through, you know, even with a random sample, we'll see that some of them actually, you know, say why the decision was made, and some of them appear not to do anything other than recite what the standard is.
Right. Well, perhaps, I mean, that was, sorry, Jeff, just perhaps that's, you know, it was when we designed it initially, it was really just, you know, to issue a finding. It wasn't necessarily to provide a rationale, and that could be something that we, as a group, make a recommendation on whether they should or should not include a rationale. And
when
the thought was
we,
that if they include.
When you say we, is that IRT or STI? Because it was my understanding in STI there would be a decision.
It was both. It was definitely IRT, and I remember with STI, because we all discussed, Kathy, if you remember, we all discussed that issuing decisions with rationale or with a lengthy or with an explanation.
Rationale, right.
Well, even a detailed rationale would increase the cost substantially, and that was something we were all seeking not to do, which explains why there's not uniformity as to whether there is a rationale. But be that as it may, that could be an area of discussion as to whether we think panelists should issue a rationale. But I just, again, and I don't necessarily agree with Phil on some of the interpretations of the doctrines and figuring out what constitutes use, because use is not just websites, but there's other uses. but they are larger questions that are usually brought up in the UDRP context, which are not clear and convincing. Thanks.
Terrific. Thanks for your comments, Jeff. I saw that someone else had popped into the queue. Was there anyone else who wanted to speak on this? Okay. Let's see. Greg, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kathy. Greg Chatton for the record. Just to say in response, or not so much in response to what Phil said, my concerns continue about 3 as it stands, but I'm glad to see that Phil favors some form of a rewrite, so maybe we can square the circle on this question in some fashion. I was concerned about the idea that we would get into examining the underlying jurisprudence, but that's even taking us into yet another step into kind of second-guessing slash, a level of review that I don't think, we've discussed at all. So that may be just my misinterpretation of what Phil said, but I think that that's kind of a whole other can of worms that I don't think we should open. Shifting gears a little bit, I was looking at the ADR forums, URS rules, and all it says about in these rules is that the examiner's determination shall be in writing, provide the reasons on which it is based, indicate the date on which it was rendered, and identify the name of the examiner. I guess the question is, how do they police that? Is there any kind of supervisory review, not second guessing, but maybe in terms of looking at which examiners seem to be doing a good job or not? If we are going to get into an actual review of opinions or decisions, I think there are whole bunches of questions about process, but I'm not even going to get into those because I'm still proceeding on the assumption that we haven't decided to do that, and we may well decide not to do that. So I won't go into process questions that are hopefully down a road we won't travel. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Greg. So let me dive into something that Brian Beckham, who, of course, can't be on the call. It's the middle of the night, European time. So Brian said, without reading his whole email, that he'd like to reiterate his observation that the 4 co-chair questions are already covered in both Parts 1 topics and Part 2 questions, respectively, at M. And it is difficult to see the need for yet another separate document or set of questions to consider. Now, that, of course, makes sense. So would anyone object to moving the co-chair's questions with revisions to reflect the discussion of today and the array of different questions people have and concerns that people have into Section M, the URS provider section. So we'll put it in, it would probably belong in the 3rd column, so that we can see kind of the discussion that we've been having for these last few weeks on the co-chair statement, and then discuss it as we evaluate M1, evaluation of URS providers and their respective processes, including training of panelists. So we've kind of framed the discussion, but like with everything else, we haven't said exactly what will happen. We're framing the topic, and we'll dive more deeply into it when we get there. Okay. David says no objection here to such a move in reflecting this discussion. Thank you. And, of course, we'll put out that reflection discussion in a highlighted form so people can see it and make their own edits and discussions. It may take us a little while, a few days to do that, but that will come out. And then Others are welcome to edit as well, per our usual form. Justin says, yes, makes sense to me to move these to Section M, and it answers my earlier questions, too, or question, too. Okay, Greg, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Kathy. Greg Shatton again. I would also agree with the idea of reorganizing the questions so that they're more where they should be. Right now we have, five standard questions at the front, four co-chairs bullet points, two overarching questions, and a partridge in a pear tree, and they're all and then we have the big chart of all the questions. So, right now what we have is definitely a work in progress in terms of organization, and I think we should try to rationalize this into a straight-through process as opposed to Christmas carol that we have at the present point.
Greg, hold on. What I was thinking of was not the whole partridge pear tree epic song. Of course, the overarching questions are already in our materials. So it would be, and a lot of the co-chair statement, Phil, if I'm misstating anything, let me know. A lot of the co-chair statement is by way of background, so that anybody reading this could easily have the context. But I think we're really talking about the four bullet points on page 2 of the co-chair statement, which is page 10 of the materials in front of us, the last page. Those four bullet points as revised and discussed extensively. I think that's what – does that address your concern?
No, that was all I was referring to in any case. I was not referring to bringing all the narrative – and
okay.
All what I was just saying is that we have, in addition to the four bullet points, there are the two overarching questions and the five golden rings in the front. And the question of how we would deal with all of these and whether they're they weren't five golden rings. They were five overarching. They weren't overarching was the two. There were the five points that were kind of, I think, they're originally proposed. So how we integrate this into a reasonable process document, I think, is open. Is an open question. I think we don't need the background and the narrative stuff, but we should kind of have it in essence, ultimately, kind of one set of queries that we go through, and not kind of these ancillary outcroppings. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Any other comments? And to staff, is there anything that from, because I know you've also, or anyone who wants to address Susan and Brian's letters, is there anything you think we haven't addressed? I've got them both in front of me. I've been checking off issues that they raise. Is there anything else we need to raise to move forward? We've talked about now the action item of moving this to Section M1, and so it kind of fits M1 of the chart, Part 2, the more detailed chart with the four columns, and so it kind of fits into the overall format that we have of kind of the underlying questions and then the high-level questions, and so it fits into the overall format. Okay, George, you've posted a lot. Let me pause and see if you want to actually come online and talk about what you've been posting or raise any other issues. I'm not going to read everything in chat, but if you want to come online, that sounds great. Okay, we are almost at 12 o'clock Eastern time. So we've been on the call for an hour, and normally our Asia-Pacific calls are a little shorter. Greg, is that a new – oh, George, go ahead. Thank you for responding. Go ahead, please.
George Greg, that's for the transcript. Yeah, I was just pointing out that it's not literally impossible to review some of these decisions if one finds that the actual reasoning of the panelist seems questionable given – their own statements, and I posted an example to the chat room of Expedia.reviews where it seems very questionable for the panelists to claim that domain couldn't be consistent with comment and criticism. He claims, it's not consistent with any accepted definition, which seems incorrect to me, and it was only resolving to a registrar's holding page. So I think there are examples out there just that seems that, for whatever reason, there's different views as to whether we should do that review, and I'm obviously on the side that says we should do it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Thanks for coming online to share it, and thanks for the link in the chat room. I'll go to that after the call. Mary, I apologize. You've had your hand up, and I didn't call on you. I apologize.
Not at all, Kathy. This is Mary from staff, and I'd actually typed the reason for raising my hand into the chat because it certainly isn't staff's role to suggest to the working group which parts of a member's email is or is not or may or may be relevant. So our suggestion from the staff side was that since we had Brian's statement up here on the screen for a couple of minutes and presuming that folks on the call will have looked at it, we could do the same with Susan's to make sure, as you asked, that whether there is or is not something in there for further discussion or edits as the case may be.
That sounds like a good plan. Thank you. So we've got, I think you said, Brian's letter up. We can all scroll through it, and it looks like we've already adopted, well, not looks like, we've already adopted his suggestion in the first substantive paragraph. And there was discussion in the chat room of what George posted, all of which I'm looking forward to reviewing in detail after the call and jumping into this case with its URS result, which a number of people seem to know. Okay. Comments on Brian's letter? Why don't we post Susan's letter? So Susan also in the first paragraph, second paragraph, notes that the topics should be, I'm just reading last line, should be incorporated, the four co-chair questions, four bullets, and now the four bullets as revised by this discussion, should be incorporated into the topics / questions, not sit as a separate statement. So I think we've definitely addressed that. Okay, she raises questions about bullet three and raises a number of issues that we've discussed today. So hopefully she will be, as everyone will have an opportunity to look at this after it's been edited, hopefully her comments will be incorporated with that as well. I'm just reading down through the letter again. Okay, so let me give everyone a minute to read this in their own time and in their own way and see if there's anything else we need to discuss. Terrific. I'm going to move on. First, I'd like the record, the notes to reflect our thanks to Susan and Brian for submitting substantive comments. This is a great way to do it if you can't be on a call. And even if you can and you've got substantive issues to be considered, it's great to put it in writing. I know it takes time, and I know none of us have lots of time or any time, but it lets people think about it and review it and come to the meetings prepared to discuss it, which is awesome. So, I think the note should reflect our great thanks to Brian and Susan for doing that and really kicking off our discussion today. Okay, so I think that wraps up the discussion. Does anyone else want to comment? I mean, do we have any general comments on the tables that we're looking at, on the overall document that we have now moved through all the way to the end of page 10? And And Mary, would it be appropriate for you to give the preview of the call agenda for February 7th, which is at our usual time, or would you like me to?
Kathy, why don't you go ahead and do that preview?
Okay. So the co-chairs agreed in the meeting that we should let you know so that you could put out the word to other people in the working group that our next meeting on February 7th at the usual time is going to be a review of the URS template. Barry Cobb couldn't join us tonight, or he'd be giving this introduction, but there's been a lot of work on the URS template and what it might look like and what the elements might look like. Not a substantive review. That's obviously however you define it or however you don't. Not what we're talking about today, but kind of an overview of the cases of the 800-plus URS cases and kind of a quick overview and a spreadsheet of what elements we might look at. And so, you know, really beginning to dive in. So Barry is going to walk us through the template, the URS template with this overview of elements and the background of how it was created and share it with everyone and for discussion and review. So it is a good call to be on as it's kind of the beginning of the next step, the beginning of the deep dive into the material itself. Any questions, any comments, any closing thoughts? Then I wish you a good morning and good afternoon and good evening and a good night to everybody going to sleep on the East Coast. Thank you very much, and thank you, staff. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator Mary, if you could stop all recordings.